Chapter 65. Kicking Over the Traces. I had 6 weeks of freedom before returning to Scotland to continue the process of becoming a member of the Findhorn Foundation. I decided to make my way back to London, as I still had a longish list of things to do in and around the city, things I'd not managed to do earlier in the year, when I first arrived from Australia. At the top of my list was to visit the town of Watford in Hertfordshire, in the hope of locating the homes where my parents had lived before they married. That is, if they were still standing. Their marriage certificate provided both addresses. 91 Rickmansworth Road for my mother, and 28 Woodland Drive for my father. I took the train from Euston Station for the half-hour trip. As we rumbled along, I carefully reviewed my map of Watford, and very soon after arriving, I'd located both houses, only 2.5 kilometres apart. Whilst standing in front of each house, I tried to visualize my parents as young people living their lives within these sturdy walls that sheltered their individual hopes, dreams, and aspirations, before they decided to marry. Here I was in the tranquil post-World War I surroundings my parents left behind, when they decided to immigrate to Australia. Having accomplished my mission, I strolled down to visit the picturesque St. Mary's Church, where my parents were married. With my birth family uppermost in my thinking as I write, now is a good time to briefly background the two families who came together on Saturday, 25th of January, 1936. My mother, Ethel Vera Wyon. My mother came from a cultured trilingual family. Her mother, Gertrude Julie Selma Teeler. My maternal grandmother was a petite, feisty German woman, from a cultured Silesian family. She trained as a dancing teacher, after which she moved to Dublin, where, for many years, she ran a profitable dancing school for well-to-do children. I remember my mother saying the Irish loved her mother because both the Irish and the Germans disliked the English. Her father, Melville Walter Thornton Wyon. My maternal grandfather taught French and German at the Watford Boys Grammar School. He came from a long line of die engravers and medalists, many of whom worked at the Royal Mint and elsewhere for 150 years. My maternal grandparents met at a boarding house for posh single folk. Gertrude was 42, and Melville was 28 when they decided to marry in 1911. Because of the 14-year age difference, they chose to marry in London, rather than running the risk of scandalizing their Dublin social set. As a married woman, Gertrude no longer ran her dancing school. Instead, she took up household management duties. I assume her business was leased or sold, and the proceeds used to set up their home in Dublin. 3 years later, when Gertrude was 45, she gave birth to my mother. 2 years after my mother was born, Melville enlisted as an officer with the 2nd South Staffordshire Regiment and moved to France. He was quickly promoted to regimental adjutant, before being wounded during Operation Michael in March, 1918. Lucky to survive, he returned to Dublin to recuperate. After World War I, Gertrude's brother, academic Johannes Teeler, died in Halle, Germany. Gertrude was the major beneficiary of his considerable estate. My mother explained that after World War I, it was impossible to take money or assets out of Germany, so Gertrude's practical solution was to move the family to Halle to spend her inheritance. That accomplished, the family then moved to Durban, South Africa, where Melville's mother lived. She was then married to her second husband, Leo Illingworth. Melville was drawn there by talk of lucrative business opportunities, but unfortunately, his efforts were fruitless. My mother told me of his unsuccessful attempt at running guns. How much truth there is in her story, I cannot tell. I gather that by 1927, most of Gertrude's inheritance was gone, so the family had no choice but to return to the United Kingdom, for Melville to take up a language teaching position at the Watford Boys Grammar School. Gertrude had sufficient funds remaining to buy a house and enroll my mother at Northfield School for Girls, as a day scholar. So, after living in Germany and South Africa for some years, Watford became the setting for the next chapter of their lives. Now on to my father and his family. My father, John Edward Webb Ginger, later Granger. My father was an electrical engineer and inventor. His mother, Annie Isabella Della. My paternal grandmother was a homemaker, the expected role for women from middle-class families at that time. My father had an older sister. He told me the story of their childhood experience with an au pair who only spoke to them in French. After she left, they made a pact, agreeing never to speak French again. His sister, my only aunt, died of a botched appendectomy. These few anecdotal snippets are all that I have of my father's early life. His father, John Ginger. My paternal grandfather was an accountant who, for many years, held the responsible position of Watford Borough Treasurer. I know little about my father's family for a number of reasons. My father, a mercurial character, cut himself off from his birth family as a result of a disagreement sometime after they moved to Australia. Another reason was that my father left us when I was 9. As a result, he wasn't around to answer the inevitable string of questions a growing child asks when wanting to construct a picture of absent grandparents, living on the other side of the world. I don't recall seeing any photographs of his family. It was as though they didn't exist. So now let's get back to my parents' story. My mother was art school trained, encouraged to follow in the footsteps of her father's artistic family. She was 22 when she met my father, who was 6 years older, at a social function somewhere in Watford. Once, in a moment of candor, she confessed that she was in love with someone else at the time, but it didn't work out. She then took up with my father and they quickly became pregnant. A hastily organized wedding followed, and my brother, Selwyn Ellingworth Webb Ginger, was born in July 1936. My father was extremely pleased with the union because, as they used to say, and probably still do, he'd married above his station. I assume my mother was happy too, grateful to have a father for her unborn child. There's no doubt that the stigma of having a child out of wedlock would have impacted negatively on my mother and her family, the result of the rigid societal attitudes that controlled women's lives at that time. My father was an electrical engineer. After graduating, he couldn't find a job in London so, out of desperation, he applied for one with Siemens Schuckert, a German industrial conglomerate, wanting a manager for one of their subsidiary companies in Sydney, Australia. The interviewers were keen, as my father's qualifications and experience were what they wanted, but there was a major stumbling block. He was told that all the correspondence and technical specifications would be written in German. But my father didn't speak, or read or write in German. Then and there, he agreed to learn the language, and 3 months later, his second interview was conducted entirely in German. Of course, the job was his, and with it, the die was cast. My parents and my brother were on their way to the Antipodes, after 3 months with the Siemens office in Nuremberg. Whilst in Nuremberg, my parents attended an Adolf Hitler rally. Years later, my mother described the experience as terrifying. She was so relieved to be on the way to Australia, well away from the rampant nationalism that pervaded Germany prior to World War II. The Ginger family departed wintry Europe in late 1936, and sailed into summery Sydney, early the next year. They brought with them the belief that they could handle any challenge this new country presented. The weather, the customs, the food, and the Australian accent, whilst at the same time building business and social networks in a city where they knew no one. In September 1939, World War II was declared. For reasons not discussed, at the end of 1941, my father was arrested and interned as an enemy alien at the Liverpool Rifle Range internment camp, out of Sydney. As a result, my mother, who'd been a housewife since arriving in Australia, suddenly had to fend for herself and my brother. She found a job as a sewing machinist, and later collected rents for a real estate agent. By the end of 1942, my father was released without charge, and I'm told he spent the rest of the war in the Mitchell Library researching my mother's famous family. But I've no way of confirming the validity of this statement. At the end of the war, 50,000 Australians had been killed or wounded, fighting in either Europe or the Pacific. As a result, Australia's Minister for Immigration, Arthur Caldwell, saw the need to increase Australia's population, and coined the unforgettable phrase, "populate or perish." My parents were happy to oblige, and as a result, I was born in Sydney at the end of 1948. Fast forward to London in 1984. My pilgrimage had quickly turned up my parents' family homes, as well as the church where they were married. But as I found myself in Watford with time on my hands, I wanted to make the most of what would probably be the first and last time I'd visit Watford. So, I decided to walk down to the town hall where my paternal grandfather had worked for many years. Here, I struck it lucky. I turned up the name of my grandfather's much younger, recently retired colleague, who was happy to reflect on their time working together. This was the icing on the cake. At the end of a full and fascinating day, I returned to London with a deeper understanding of my parents' roots, and I was so glad that I'd taken the time to kick over the traces. On reflection. Watford. Spending half a day in Watford some 48 years after my parents left for Australia, allowed me to experience their tidy town, with its well-cared-for houses and established gardens. It seemed not much had changed since my parents left in 1936. I'd discovered that summer in the United Kingdom was like winter in Australia. As I wandered the streets of Watford, I found myself thinking about the difficulties my parents faced exchanging the spring, summer, autumn, and winter of the Northern Hemisphere, for the relentless sunshine and cloudless skies they experienced in Sydney. My mother never did forget the seasons. When she was maudlin and homesick, she'd wax lyrical about the bluebells flowering in the woods, not far from her house in early spring. After visiting Watford, I could more easily picture her life there. My family. My visit to Watford brought me to consider how different our lives could have been if my parents hadn't decided to move to Australia. We didn't have many relatives on either side of the family because my parents were, in effect, only children. So, with no aunts, uncles, nor cousins, the only family I missed out on knowing were my grandparents, none of whom came to visit us in Sydney. But as my parents gradually settled into their new life, new friends appeared to replace blood relatives. To my knowledge, my father didn't return to Watford, but, in 1957, my mother did. She popped in on her way back to Australia, after spending 6 months studying at the Rhode Island School of Design in the United States. Her widowed mother was still living in the family home. In 1961, my grandmother, who was 94, decided to come to Australia for my brother's wedding, but she died on board ship and was buried at sea. Interestingly, in her will, she asked that no memorial be erected. So her wish was fulfilled. Family history. My upbringing is an example of how children often obtain more detailed information about their mother's relatives than their father's. A likely explanation is that child raising almost exclusively falls to women. Marriage. I've chosen not to marry nor have children, because I wasn't prepared to risk recreating my dysfunctional family. Since making my decision, I've noticed that many people who've experienced dysfunction growing up are determined to turn the tide by creating a loving, supportive family. But sometimes the plan backfires, and family life becomes a rerun of their own painful upbringing. In my case, I knew deep down that more than anything else I wanted to be a practicing visual artist, a journey best done alone. Facts. Arthur Caldwell was the Australian politician who oversaw the post-World War II immigration scheme.